So what is Michelin? Michelin is an international award system of restaurants.
It does not mean sitting on a counter and having a tasting menu.
And I've been to many, many, many restaurants using that Lebanese cedar tree found on our flag.
Who says you're a celebrity or you're not a celebrity?
80% of croissants in France are delivered at 4 a.m. Welcome to a new episode of Food Unscripted. And today it's going to be discussion on scripted, excitement on scripted.
Yes.
I'm very excited. Welcome, Hani, Bedouin Foodie, and myself from Garlic Onions, Anthony Hayil, for another show of no preparation, unscripted content. And today it's going to be about...
Okay, so what we are unscripted, but I made a list. I make lists, and there are lists of terms and ingredients that are being misused.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them drive me nuts.
Whoa.
So I printed out 2 copies.
Nice, thanks.
I want to go through them and get your thoughts. Tell me if, am I right to
this
be
is
annoyed?
Amazing.
Am I
yes,
right to be annoyed
course.
By some of these or not?
Let's explain what we're going to talk about today. So it's going to be about words
yeah.
that we throw here and there.
Yes.
Names that are wrong, right, probably
wrongly explained.
Traditions.
Wrongly used. Thrown on the menu.
Here and there.
Ingredients that are being overused. So I have the list. I wanted to discuss them with you and get your opinion. And you can tell me, am I right or wrong to feel like that?
I'm very excited. So let's start by, before going into the details, I'm gonna probably open a parenthesis of something that annoys me, is the use in my culture of the word Lebanese, of the Lebanese flag, and the cedar tree. And I've been to many, many, many restaurants using that Lebanese cedar tree found on our flag, where the owner is not Lebanese, where the chef is not Lebanese, where probably both of them never traveled to Lebanon, and yet using Lebanon and Lebanese food as a marketing way of promoting.
Yes.
So this is one of the things of using things, not in a bad way, but wrongly.
Yes.
And do we protect them? On another hand, some people are going to say, but yes, Italian cuisines and Italian restaurants are not owned by Italians, and probably they do not have an Italian chef in the kitchen. But at least you always ask, and someone says, yes, I've been to Italy. We know how to do a pizza. It's probably easier to buy all the ingredients from Italy and put them into something. And it builds up to a different culture. Yeah. So it starts by, are you allowed to use this and that on a big scale? And then going into the little details, you go on the menu and they say, tabbouleh from the Lebanese village. Okay, wait, do you know where the Lebanese village is?
Yeah, exactly. You know, but there is a solution, you know, like in France, they've protected the champagne. It has to come from a specific region that you can call it champagne. It applies to some cheeses also in Italian, Parmigiano Reggiano, all of that. So there is a system to control this. And it's just maybe we don't use it. You see, you're right about cedars. There's even cedars brand now you see it selling. You don't know, just like the Sabra brand. It's not really a Lebanese brand, you know,
definitely
Lebanese
not.
Owned anyway.
Definitely not.
So let's start with this. Okay, so the first one is one we touched on in one of the episodes. The term Michelin starred chef. Okay, so Michelin starred chef is not a correct thing to say.
Yeah.
Because the Michelin star is awarded to the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
But the chef gets to wear it on his jacket. But you see it all the time in advertising. We have Michelin starred chef visiting, come for this and that and whatever. Do you agree that Michelin star chef is being...
Definitely, and it's very important to know that whenever a chef who has the star on his chest leaves that restaurant, he cannot take the star with him.
Yeah.
He becomes a chef that was awarded,
That
was awarded, but now it's not a chef that has the award.
Yeah.
Usually, they link the chef and the restaurant. And we've seen chefs that own 3, 4, 5, and 6 restaurants. They do not have 6 stars. They have 1 because... They are chef with one restaurant, connected to one restaurant, and that chef is with this restaurant. But all the others are businesses, investments.
Sure.
So every one of their restaurants are owned by them, but have a chef. So the restaurant gets the award connected or linked to that head chef.
Yes.
Without forgetting that the chef has 14 up to 20 sometimes chefs that help him. At Noma, they were 42.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There are chefs that own multiple restaurants and they have stars. You can say Chef X has 19 stars awarded to his various restaurants across the world. But like you said, he's not going to wear 19 stars on his shirt. So we agree on this.
So Michelin, just to finish on the Michelin part. So what is Michelin? Michelin is an international award system of restaurants that works through countries or cities. When this city or the country pays for Michelin to come in, so it's not globally. Yes. It will start in Houston. It has started in New York, but it's not in the States as a whole.
City by city.
Exactly. Yeah. So it is in Dubai, but not in Lebanon and so on. Yeah. One, two, there are two levels of Michelin. There is the level when we say this is a Michelin restaurant. Okay, wait, is it a starred Michelin restaurant or a Bib Gourmand? Yes. And the Bib Gourmand is that face of the Michelin tire logo.
Bibendum, his name is Bibendum.
Exactly. That gives it recommended by the guide, casual and recommended by the guide, but no star.
And good value for money.
Yes.
Which is the important part.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not a consolation prize.
No.
It's not like, oh, we're not going to give you a star, but we're going to give you a star.
Al harakat. So it doesn't have to have two forks and two knives and the whole shebang of things.
Yeah.
Just a casual, enjoyable with Michelin quality.
Yeah. Okay. So we pretty much agree on this one. Okay. The term home cooked. You see it all the time. Home cooked, home style. I think home cooked should be home cooked. I don't think a restaurant should say home cooked.
So homey feel.
Yeah.
Let's start using by feels like home, but it's not home cooked. And home cooked is a big no. And I think and France reached a point at a certain point in time, probably 3 or 4 years back. This is very new, where people wanted to know is it true or not, and people wanted that feeling. So they created the award that looks like a house that is a homey cuisine or made at home or whatever, where you are obliged to use probably 60 or 70, I'm not going to say something wrong, but we'll double check into that, unscripted, so I didn't prepare, 60 to 70% of your ingredients that are made at home or made in small businesses or made
that's
in-house.
And
made
in-house.
So accordingly, when 80% of croissants in France are delivered at 4 a.m. and then frozen, and then they're put on boulangeries and they write made in-house, homemade, okay, wait.
Yeah.
So France had to come up and say, okay, stop lying. Stop lying, it's lying to people. Yeah. So back to the home-cooked, and we see it, home-cooked rice or home-cooked
warana.
And I had a discussion with a restaurant owner some time ago, where it was a daily dish, home food for lunch, tabkhat. At the end, I called him and said, I didn't feel the mom's touch.
Yes.
So definitely your chef, which I respect, is great at doing hummus and tabbouleh, but definitely not. And we talked about the difference between a festive lunch, meza table, and what we eat at home.
Yeah.
So definitely your chef needs help. Get a mom to add the touch of passion or nafas.
We talked about that. Restaurants where you can taste the love in the food, you know? Home cooking style is not the same as saying home cooked or homemade.
I agree.
Yeah. Look, you can have homemade makdous that's made by somebody at home and serve it in your restaurant. Okay. But you be careful with the use of homemade.
Yes. Stop lying.
There's a difference. Okay. You said it, not me. All right. Celebrity chef.
Oh, please take your time. Tell me everything about it.
Okay. The first question is, who says you're a celebrity or you're not a celebrity? I'll tell you what my thinking on this. Celebrity, you have to be known outside of what you do. You know what I mean? Like you have to be recognized. It could be you have seasons on television. It could be, you know, you're married to a famous person. You're a celebrity. You're known. You're in the news. You're in the tabloids. That's a celebrity chef. Celebrity chef is not a successful Michelin starred chef, which is a wrong thing to say. A chef of a Michelin starred restaurant isn't a celebrity chef.
The thin line between being a celebrity and having 10,000 followers on Instagram.
Yeah.
So if you have 10,000 followers on Instagram, you are not a celebrity.
No, you're not. You're not. And you shouldn't be allowing people to call you a celebrity chef and using it in your marketing. And we have celebrity chef collaborations. You're not.
In what interests us today, one, stop using words Keith McCann.
Yeah.
Two, nobody said a Wagyu burger is better than a normal burger.
I prefer not a Wagyu burger.
Of course.
Yeah. And then let me end by saying, please don't use A5 or Wagyu to elevate the price on your menu. And use it if it's actually a fiber. And when you're in Japan and you're eating the high marbling, they'll give you a small piece of it. It's not like the entire steak you're having is that.
Super expensive.
Or they'll cut it very thin. They'll melt the fat.
Honey, you cannot eat it all.
It's too heavy.
You cannot do it 400 grams.
Yeah.
It's like having a, it's like eating a lurpak
without
bread.
Absolutely. Agreed on this one. One of my favorite food destinations and is the Basque region in northeastern Spain. I love it. San Sebastian being the big city or the most well-known city. Now, another thing popping up on menus, the word San Sebastian or Basque to describe a dish or to describe a menu or to describe the cheesecake. Mostly you see
cheesecake.
San Sebastian cheesecake or burnt Basque cheesecake. Burnt Basque cheesecake or San Sebastian cheesecake, it's not just a cheesecake and the top is brown colored. It's not that. There's a lot more that goes into that. And it's being misused.
Yeah, I 100% agree. What is a cheesecake and how cheesecake trend has become. So again, a decade back, the trendy cheesecake was a New York cheesecake or an American cheesecake.
Absolutely.
Made famous by the Cheesecake Factory.
Yeah.
And then fast forward, we need something more elevated, classier, more expensive.
To be able to charge more.
And then the Basque cheesecake were created.
Yeah.
Basque is more complicated to do, is more complicated to have a fresher smell.
It uses different cheese and different milk.
Way different cheese.
Different.
Exactly. Yeah. And that burning and the paper used and the no biscuit on the side, on the bottom, and so on and so forth. So probably one of the things, read about the Basque cheesecake, which is my favorite. I love it.
Yeah.
But seeing cheesecakes all around displays and saying, this is a Basque cheesecake.
Yeah. So we're in agreement on this one. It's starting to bother.
I'm sure we're going to agree on all, but...
I just want to add, the most famous place for Basque or San Sebastian cheesecake in San Sebastian is called La Viña. So if you ever go to La Viña and wait in line, it's worth it.
Noted.
All right, next one, truffles.
Mm-hmm.
Now this is a huge one, right? I remember, as a younger man, I used to only eat truffles between September and January, or October and January, which was white truffle season. We never had truffle potato chips. We never had truffle burgers, truffle pizza, except in those 3 months, they had the white truffle pizza. It was more about white truffle. The black truffle was mostly had, for me anyway, in French cuisine inside foie gras or a Perigord, they call it, right? So now it's everywhere. And again, it's being used to charge more. Truffle, especially truffle fries and this. There's fake truffle being made, truffle essence. They're making it in a laboratory. It has no truffle in it. It's just a flavor that's sprayed on the French fries or whatever. I would like to go back to truffle is real truffle.
Understanding what truffle is, very simple. If you like truffle, if someone likes truffle, if you want to understand what truffle is, try to find a black truffle or go to a restaurant and have a black truffle and ask that same restaurant, if you cannot do the experiment at home, to get you truffle oil. Eat from this truffle oil, which has become everywhere and chips truffle and all that shit around, and eat just one slice of black truffle. The feeling inside your mouth and the energy you're gonna feel and the shaking of palatal buds, you would say, okay, wait, I've been lied to all my life.
Yes.
A truffle oil is so cheap, so misused, wrong flavor, loaded with aromas, has nothing to do with truffle, that you would say, wait, I'm not even gonna buy it for home.
Yes.
And when you take that truffle and understand how much it takes, and I've been twice to truffle farms in Australia, which are newly producing truffles brought from Europe, and how much time it takes, and how many dogs it takes, and how the season is just too small, 1 or 2 months a year, and how expensive it is, et cetera, et cetera. And when you smell it and you eat it, and you say, okay, wait, this is a $400 piece.
Yes, it's a luxury item.
How can they put it into chips or whatever it is? So truffle in general, I'm talking about black, you're talking about white, which is triple more expensive than the black one.
Yes.
So truffle is a luxury item,
sold
by the gram.
And it's shaved, it's paper thin, like you can see through it.
By the gram.
Yes.
So that all of marketing approach to what truffle is, If you're a foodie
yeah.
and want to connect with truffle, just do the experiment. Same table, same paper. One drop of this, one slice of this,
yeah.
and you'll know what I mean.
It's important to add that there are Italian producers who make beautiful truffle-infused olive oil, but they use real truffle.
Yeah.
Well, the one we were talking about is the one that's made in labs. It's a truffle essence.
Yeah.
It's just a flavoring. It's yes. made in a lab. It's a flavoring. That's what you're getting in potato chips and things like that.
Yes.
So that's another one.
I can just open a parenthesis because I just yeah. came back from the States.
Yeah.
And probably USA is the only country in the world that uses sourdough as a flavor and not as real sourdough.
Yeah.
So you go to the supermarket and buy a sourdough. What is a sourdough? Sourdough is a 3-4 day process, sometimes years. And people who have the sourdough dough brag about it being a 30-year sourdough or 40-year sourdough. And then in the States, you can buy something that looks like a sourdough, that is the essence of sourdough, not even aged, not even a sourdough dough or whatever the yeast, it's yeah. normal yeast, and they call it sourdough. So the misuse of ingredients, of names, just understand what you're
exactly,
buying,
exactly.
what you expect.
Okay. The next one is another Japanese one. I'm big Japanese purist, so these things really bother me.
I noticed.
The word omakase, you're starting to hear it now everywhere. Omakase means I'll leave it up to you. It's basically it started out at sushi restaurant. You go and I'll leave it up to the sushi master, who knows what fish they have for the day, and they'll serve you whatever they feel is the best they have for the day. It does not mean sitting on a counter and having a tasting menu that is the same every day. And it does not mean...
ordering crispy
yeah, mac. You know what I mean? It's not a tasting menu.
I love this. I very like this one in
yeah.
particular. Omakase is, imagine, a restaurant that is 40 or 50 square meter, without mentioning the kitchen. And inside an omakase, you would have only 8 people dining. So those 8 people would have to pay the rent.
Yeah.
This is how it goes.
Yeah.
So when you go to omakase and you order a meal, a menu that is $400, $500, or whatever it is, sometimes starts at
$300, yeah.
make sure you are having the restaurant for yourself and you're paying for the rent, one. Two, an omakase is just one bite at a time of very highly classified items and ingredients with amazing rice, and that chef enjoying the chef rolling it with his hands and connecting his hands and the feeling and the energy with food and eating something, a rice that is at 37 degrees.
Yeah.
And for it to be an omakase, it needs to be a Japanese chef who has years and years and years of experience.
Yes.
For him to come and sit in front of you and tell you, today you're gonna eat my way,
yes.
my ingredients, my culture.
Yes.
So it's not eating at the bar and ordering crispy rice.
No, and it's also doesn't mean that if you're eating at an omakase today, you can come back tomorrow and you may eat completely different foods. It's not the same thing. It's being confused with tasting menu. And that's bothering me. And it's a very Japanese thing. It's now, there are restaurants that are not doing sushi that are doing omakase also, but it's still, it's a Japanese thing. It's a Japanese word.
Spot on.
Yeah. Kobe beef we discussed, San Sebastian we discussed, organic. Does organic mean more expensive when you go to buy organic vegetables? That's what is being used now. The organic section is getting bigger and bigger and bigger in the supermarket. Organic really, correct me if you know better, but I think organic means it's food that is grown without the use of pesticide. Is it other than that?
I'm going to tell you just a saying and we'll get back to that. Organic is the normal food my ancestors used to eat.
The Mediterranean diet.
As simple as it is. And yes, organic is very simple. Something that is natural, no pesticide, no additives, and using pesticides, natural pesticides that can start from garlic to olive oil soap and things that are natural and found in nature,
mm-hmm.
focusing on pushing away or killing mosquitoes or animals or whatever it is that would come in and eat your vegetables and
yes.
eat your crops.
Yes.
Accordingly, it has become a marketing tool, and there's a big difference between organic, natural, bio, and so on and so forth.
Bio and French.
Yeah. So in the supermarket, you go in and see organic on the shelves. Just saw it yesterday. 17 dirham, five cucumbers, or 18 dirhams, five cucumbers, etc. And then the same, a non-organic would be 3 dirham or 4 dirham.
Yes, fraction of the cost.
Fraction it is.
Yeah.
Organic is better, yes. But
it's better for you. But does it mean it tastes better?
No. No.
It doesn't.
Does it taste better? No. Can you guarantee it's organic? I don't know.
Is there anybody going around watching, making sure that supermarket X is not labeling it organic while it's not organic? We don't know. That's why you have to go to reputable people, reputable restaurant, people you trust.
And make sure on the label, you see that green label that looks
like a
green leaf, etc. But pay attention to that. For them to take that green, all the surrounding farms need to be organic as well.
Yes.
Because if your neighbor puts pesticides, you're done. You're out of the game.
Yep.
So accordingly, is it, whenever they took the logo or certification, did it continue to be? Yes, it is expensive because the produce are less. Yes, it is expensive because it doesn't last too long on the shelf. Yes, it will be more expensive.
Yep.
But doesn't mean if you're paying more, you're eating better.
Yes.
So double check
yes.
who you're buying from. Go buy from the producer himself, and yes, it is organic. Go buy from a producer that eats the same produce. But taking that product on the shelf, wrapped in nylon, out of the fridge, staying for 3-4 days, and then I'm not sure what happens to it, and it was not protected by pesticide, unfortunately, in our 2024 world, is it still as good as it should be and paying more for it better?
Yeah.
I have questions here.
Yeah. Caviar. Mm-hmm. Caviar, like truffle, went from being a luxury item, and now it's being farmed all over the world. The prices have gone down, and you really see it everywhere. It's become, I'll throw a dab of caviar on top of this dish and charge more.
So probably add the word beluga to it, and this is where all the lie starts.
Okay. So we both know that beluga is an endangered species, and harvesting the caviar of beluga from the Caspian Sea is illegal. So legally speaking, I don't even think they're allowed to use the name beluga on these things.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on the use?
My thoughts are the extreme of it. When you go to a sushi restaurant and you have those black dots or orange dots that are both in a small container that is only $2, this is not caviar.
No, it's not.
When on sushi, maki, crispy, whatever, you have the orange dot again, that are Tobiko or whatever it is, called caviar wrongly, this is not caviar. This is not caviar.
Yeah.
So the caviar you can enjoy at Petrosian in Paris or Las Vegas or wherever they are around the world, that size.
In the blue can.
It's probably around 100, 200 euros.
Yeah.
The flavor it gives, the oiliness it gives on the lips, the things that happen in your mouth is something I cannot explain.
Yes.
The smell and the flavor of the sea, I cannot explain.
What kind of, like, I grew up eating it as a luxury, luxury item, a luxury food. And just seeing it everywhere now, it's kind of, you know, you see it, there's a guy in, a very famous guy in New York that's putting it on fried chicken. Okay, I hear it's really good. I'll probably go try it too. But it just pains me to see this ingredient going from a luxury item to a mass-used item. But
so probably,
it's the sign of the times, it's the farming. China is the biggest caviar producer in the world. The brand name is Kaluga. I was having an argument with a friend of mine about that, saying that they're all pretty much the same now because they're all farmed. Ocetra farmed from China, and Ocetra farmed in Austria are going to be very similar.
Can I get into the rest of my list?
Yes.
Now, we all know Salt Bae.
Yeah.
Right? So Salt Bae found that he could put gold leaf on a burger and charge hundreds of dollars for this burger. Now, the gold leaf is not made of real gold. It's just, you just see it. And Instagram had a big role to play with this. So now you're seeing it pop up. It's chefs are using it to make the dish seem more sophisticated. Chefs and restaurants are using it to charge more. You can go into Nusret and order the burger with the gold leaf and the burger without the gold leaf, and the price difference is huge. I hate gold leaf.
It doesn't add value. It's not even loaded with vitamins. It doesn't have any ingredient, any nutrition facts. So why the gold leaf?
Yeah, you can charge more. It's for the gram.
For the gram.
Yeah.
I like that word.
For the gram.
For the gram.
Yeah.
For Instagram.
The steak comes out with gold leaf on it. They'll chop it, this, that. The restaurant sees it coming. Ah, they ordered the expensive one. It's become status symbol. Eating at Nusret, the gold steak and the gold burger is a status symbol.
So don't get fooled. Gold has no added value whatsoever.
Fool's gold. This is fool's gold.
Unless you want to have 100,000 likes on your photo.
Yeah.
Yeah. So pay for it.
Yeah.
And get the likes.
Yes. Agreed. The word umami is
umami.
One.
Oh.
Umami this, umami that. It's popping up everywhere.
What is umami? So let's start by the description.
Yeah. I did some research on it. Umami is one of the five basic flavors. Sweet, salty, sour. It's another one. It's basically a savory taste. Savory as in the opposite of sweet. That's kind of what umami is.
So that umami...
It doesn't mean delicious, and it doesn't mean a burst of flavor.
It's different. It's something that the mouth does not understand much. It's not that simple things that we have been brought to feel since our childhood. And definitely the Japanese had an...
It's a Japanese word.
Additional say into that. It's something that you discover around lack maturity. Yes. It's something I discovered along the way.
Yes.
So umami is being used everywhere.
Yes. It's something you discover as your palate improves and grows and whatever the word is. As your palate develops.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's make sure umami is being used correctly. And it's also another one that's being used on menu to make it sound more sophisticated or to charge you more. We've been seeing a lot of collaborations lately.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be the hot thing to do now. Chefs coming from out of town, visiting our restaurants in Dubai, doing a collaboration. But now you see it also happening between chefs in the same city. And not, in my opinion, not every collaboration works. There has to be something, an added value to it. Yeah. I recently went to a collaboration of two very famous, very well-known chefs. But I was disappointed because I had already had every single dish I had. When a collaboration is Chef A does five of his dishes and Chef B does five of his dishes. Well, I've been to this restaurant and I've been to that restaurant and I've had both of them. I like collaboration when it's done properly and you get foods that are not, you're not, you haven't had already.
So it's a collaborative effort, if you want to describe it in a better way.
Yes.
So the word collaboration has been made famous by Instagram lately, where you can collaborate with a restaurant and click on it, and then the two accounts come together.
Yeah.
But it is an old happening, I would say, between chefs from different things, when they call it a two-hand dinner or a four-hand dinner or a dîner à quatre mains, à six mains, etc., etc. So accordingly, okay, what is the collaboration? It's a collaborative effort of adding this to that, added value, where Japanese meets Lebanese, where French meets American, et cetera, et cetera. So that collaboration of having, we talked about famous chefs or big names.
Michelin star chef. Which is no such thing.
So getting the chef and taking a selfie with him does not mean he's adding value.
Yeah.
So the collaboration needs to add value.
Yes.
Someone needs to come in and say, I'm bringing something on the table.
Yes.
My ingredient, my know-how, my culture, my homemade ingredients, my long being prepared food, etc., etc. So the word collaboration being used again, I receive it on Instagram in different ways every day saying, would you collaborate with our restaurant? Okay, what is it?
Yeah.
Are you inviting me to have lunch?
Yeah.
Is this what a collaboration is? Or what's in it for me?
Yeah.
This is the word. I know what's in it for you, you're getting the advertisement, but what's in it for me? So that using the word collaboration is, I need to get something out of it and you need to get something out of it.
Yeah.
And for the consumer watching a video or tasting a food, they need to feel it's a collaborative effort.
Yes, I'll tell you what a successful collaboration looks like for me. It's when, I'll give an actual example. Last week, one Michelin star restaurant, Oceano, and Chef Gregoire invited two Michelin restaurants from New York called Atomix, contemporary Korean cooking. I have tried to go to Atomix every time I'm in New York. I haven't been able to get in there.
it was an opportunity for me. The chef came from out of town and I went and it was phenomenal. Chef Gregoire's dishes were all new for me. They weren't dishes that he already makes. They were dishes he created with Korean influence so they can complement what Chef JP, Chef Park, is gonna do from Atomix. And you know what? It was phenomenal. I got to try four or five dishes, some signature dishes from Atomix from New York. And I loved it. That, for me, is a successful collaboration.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So it's an opportunity to try a food or a restaurant that you had never tried. Another example is, you know, a three-star restaurant in Singapore, chef came and did a collab here. You know, I don't know when I'm going to be in Singapore to try it, but you know what? I got to try it here.
Building up to the next one on the list, let's talk about Manaish a little bit.
Yes.
So opening up that parenthesis, za'atar.
Yes.
When you say za'atar imported from Lebanon, you need to prove it.
And za'atar is thyme.
Thyme. So za'atar is the black...
Yeah. Is za'atar thyme mixed with sesame seed or is it just the thyme?
This is a complicated thing. Za'atar,
yeah.
Za'atar is a creation exactly like hummus. So za'atar is a creation of a couple of ingredients. It can be four and up to eight, where you create a mix that is like a black powder mm-hmm. made of herbs, which we enjoy or with olive oil or on a manoush.
Yes.
Hummus is the chickpea. And hummus, which chickpea in Arabic, is also the mix of four yes. ingredients to create the hummus dip or spread.
Yes.
On za'atar, usually there is nothing in the world in nature called za'atar. So it's called oreganum syriacum. So oreganum syriacum is za'atar, which is the Lebanese za'atar or the za'atar from the Levantine region. And there are different other things. Like oregano or the Italian thyme or oregano, which is not oregano syriacum, different yep. word.
Okay.
And there is zuba, which is the wild za'atar. And then
the
there
green
is
one that sometimes you get in Lebanese restaurants.
Yes. Yep. And there is za'atar, which we plant or you get in the wild. So accordingly, what is za'atar? You go to a restaurant, have a manouche, and then they tell you za'atar from Lebanon. So za'atar is one of the few things that you can fake as much as you can.
Yeah.
You can buy a za'atar for $1 and you can buy za'atar for 20. So imagine 20 times more. And that za'atar can start with a white powder turned into essence, mixed with flour, mixed with chickpeas, mixed with endless ingredients. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they put wood into it, which you won't feed it.
Yeah.
And then create a za'atar. And when you buy a manouche for $1, I would say less. When you buy a manouche for 10 cents, it definitely does not have za'atar into it. Definitely not. But with the essence of za'atar, which is usually forbidden to be added to the mix, you would smell za'atar and you yep. would feel za'atar, but yep. you're eating an essence.
Right.
Fast forward to za'atar, $20 the kilo, needs to have za'atar or oregano syriacum or the wild thyme, mm-hmm. wild thyme, mm-hmm. Dried, mixed with sesame, sumac, and salt. Nothing else. And yet sumac, you can have real sumac or dyed.
Sumac is another one that they can fake.
Yeah. And, so dyed red, whatever it
yes.
is. And sesame, you can have real sesames or low super quality sesame. Yeah. And some, for the 10 cent manouche, do not even use sesame. Mm-hmm. They use the sesame skin, which companies throw away when they do tahini. So all of these details, and salt, you can choose good salt, bad salt, etc. So all of these details turn into, I am selling manaish. You need to prove that your za'atar is real za'atar. And you need to prove that your manouche is for 18 dirham and that you are really using za'atar yes. imported from Lebanon. And that za'atar can be imported from the country down below, which we don't like, and can be bought from Turkey, can be bought from Syria, can be bought from Palestine, can be bought from Jordan, and can be bought from Lebanon. And usually these are the only countries that can sell or that can have za'atar because it's called oreganum syriacum. So the Syrian region, the Levantine region, you cannot plant za'atar. You cannot find za'atar in the States.
Maybe we need to have our governments do like the French do, appellation, I think they call it, or, you know, a way to control these
and
things.
And AOP is something we've been fighting for years.
We should do
it's
that.
It's very easy. Why not having a halloum that is AOC, appellation d'origine contrôlée?
Exactly.
Why not having a Lebanese cheese, Jabne Baladiye, that is AOC? Why not have Arak, AOC or AOP? It's very important for us to protect our heritage and protect our things.
These things are being culturally appropriated.
Yep.
Other cultures are taking it.
So, another episode. So, back to za'atar. Yep. And when someone says, za'atar imported from Lebanon, it needs to be a real one.
Yes.
Unfortunately, you can fake it in a million ways.
Yep. You know, our governments, our food producers, the associations, have some work to do. Just like the Japanese will put the sticker on the melon or the logo on the steak, whatever. We know we should be doing the same thing.
Very
we need
important.
To protect our
Very important. Things. Very, very important. So building up to the next on the list is the same for the pizza.
For pizza, it's the same thing. But they have controls. Not every pizza can be called Napolitan pizza. Not every cheese, not the ingredients. So they've done it.
Yeah.
Even the tomatoes have to be from a certain place.
Yeah.
So they've done it.
Yeah.
Just because it says Napolitan doesn't mean better.
So pizza comes in different forms.
Yes.
You can have a pizza. You can have a pizza. You can have pizza romana, pizza napolitana. You can have pizza in different ways. Not every single pizza needs to have or should have thick borders.
Yeah.
So napolitana pizza is a pizza that takes between 24 and 72 hours of fermentation that uses tomatoes without garlic and onions. Raw tomatoes. Simple raw San Marzano tomatoes.
San Marzano.
Not cooked tomatoes. This is what a napolitana is.
Yes.
With mozzarella on top.
Yeah.
A little bit of pecorino at the end. Olive oil.
Olive oil. Lots of olive oil.
Basil leaves.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yes.
And that's it. So not every single pizza is a Napolitana.
Yes.
And not every single pizza you eat by the slice is an Italian pizza.
Yeah.
Italian
pizza. Napolitana, you can't eat it by the slice. It's never sold by the slice.
It doesn't work.
Because it's soft and soggy in the middle. So it doesn't travel well.
Yeah.
When you cut a Napolitan pizza, it's all about that crust at the end. You look inside. But when you hold it up, it'll fall. You have to fold it over and eat it. Sorry to my Napolitan friends, but my favorite is the Romana style, which is more of a crispy, thinner crisp. But just because it says Napolitan on the menu doesn't mean you can charge more, or it doesn't mean it's better, and it doesn't mean it's real.
It's a preference, exactly.
Learn
like
what real Napolitan pizza is.
It's exactly a preference.
It's a preference.
Like meat.
Yeah.
So you don't like it, probably others do.
Yeah.
You might like something else.
It never travels well.
Exactly.
It's always better to eat it in the restaurant, out of the oven, fresh. That's my advice on Napolitan pizza.
Spot on.
So there's a trend in Dubai. There's a chips from Oman called Chips Oman.
Mm-hmm.
And it's starting. It's already here. It's popping up everywhere. They put it on sushi. They put it on ice cream. They put it this. Now it's flaming hot Cheetos also. A fried chicken with Cheetos, chips. I don't like that.
This is not
for a foodie. Even the word foodie, we have to explain what that is. But for someone like me who has so much respect for ingredients and
honey, it's not
it
even
pains
cold fusion.
Me to see that, especially the Cheetos. They make your hands all orange. And why? Why would you? Would you let your kids eat Cheetos fried chicken sandwich?
Why? Even called fusion. It's not even called modernized. It's not anything. It's exactly what Chipotle did to Mexican cuisine. Putting this everywhere.
Yeah.
I've seen shawarmas with chips Oman. Why?
Yeah.
Why the hell? Why?
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 Where did
dynamite
it come from,
shrimp with chips Oman? Why?
Yeah. It's everywhere.
Sad.
Yeah.
So open up this parenthesis. So what is a foodie?
Yeah.
In my opinion, a foodie is someone that understands food, enjoys food, and does not like to eat. So I like to eat. Everybody eats. Everybody likes to eat. It's not about liking or wanting to eat. It's about feeling food, enjoying food, feeling that spark in your eyes when you feel food.
Yes.
Understanding, feeling that a party is happening in your mouth when you eat. A foodie is someone that understands his ingredients. A foodie is someone that reads about food. A foodie is someone that travels for food. A foodie is not every single one of you that buys an iPhone and spreads pictures on Instagram.
Yes.
This is not a foodie.
No.
A foodie is not an influencer that just goes to restaurants. You need to understand what food is. And being able to debate a good versus the bad. Is it well done, prepared appropriately? And then you can like it or not.
Yes.
But looking at something and say, I don't like it. Who are you to judge anyway? But you need to start with the good things, understand how it's made, understand the creations, understand the product, understand where it comes from. And then at the end, you can say, in my humble opinion, it's not of my liking, but not saying, I don't like it.
Yeah.
Who are you?
So
this is what a foodie
is. So a foodie has a developed palate, understands ingredients, knows what a dish is supposed to taste like. You know, you can immediately say, no, this is not done right. Is the word gourmand in French mean foodie?
Gourmet is a foodie.
Gourmet.
Gourmand is fajan.
Fajan, someone who eats. Okay, so the word foodie is misused, mislabeled. You have it's something that takes time for you to become a foodie.
100%.
Yeah. How do you feel about traveling for food as a foodie? I consider myself a foodie. I design my holidays now. I grew out of nightclubs and beach and all of that. Food, around food. I'll look up where I'm going to eat, the restaurants. How do you feel about do people travel for food as much as I think?
I believe we had this discussion once and we talked about one important sentence is, does food do people or do people do foods?
Yeah.
And understanding the cultures is through food is very important. And we talked about what makes Saudi cuisine and what is Saudi cuisine and how can you understand Saudis from their cuisine? How can you understand Emiratis from their cuisine, the rice sitting on the floor, etc., the lamb?
Yeah.
How can you understand the Levantine region from their food? And how can you understand Italians from the freshness and colors of their lemon and tomatoes?
And this is why
Americans and their burgers.
Authenticity is so important.
Yes. So traveling for food is very important. Traveling to understand the cultures. You can go to Rome and feel the touristic parts of it and what Romans 2,000 years back did. You can go to Baalbek and understand, see Baalbek, what Romans did 2,000 years back. But to understand the culture and feel the culture, you need to eat with the people.
Yes.
You need to share bread with the people. You need to break bread with the people. So accordingly, yes, traveling with food takes you on a different level. Taking a step back and understanding, but we said that Dubai is the food destination where all cuisines of the world are here. Definitely, if you eat with the locals. If you eat with the Russians, if you eat with the Nepalis, if you eat with the Indians, if you eat whatever, but go to Dubai Mall and eat with the touristic places where Italian has been remade or Lebanese has been remade or whatever fusion creations have been done, is not called being travel for food. So we invite everyone to travel to Dubai to for food. You would see the fountain and you would enjoy the Dubai Mall and everything in between. But you will appreciate the country with the diversification of 165 or 180 plus civilizations or people cooking their food for you. So you travel for food, definitely.
I travel.
And how food. It was life-changing for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's exactly what you said. It's the most important way for me to find out about a culture and a people. And that's why I seek out authenticity, local. We said a foodie. A foodie will love and respect a street food or a little shack that does one item as much as a three-star Michelin restaurant or a highly decorated chef. They both deserve the amount of respect and knowledge and research.
Food being the international language of connection and happiness, you would connect with people through food, you will connect through people with people through a sandwich, you would see the smile on their face. They will see the smile on your face. They would feel if you like them or not, depending on their food. You can go to India, eat something and say, this. Everybody looking at you would say, you didn't like us, considering the language is a barrier. Or you can say, I want more. And they would look at you and say, you're welcome.
Yeah.
You're blessed in our home. You feel, we felt you.
Yeah.
So this is important.
That's why misusing all of these things hurts food and food culture and people's heritage even.
So back to finalizing the conversation, would say eat more of things that make you happy.
Yeah.
Do not eat things that are more expensive just because they have brand names on it.
Yes.
Look more into details on what you're eating and what it is. Don't let branding and names fool you.
Yes.
Understand food, read about food. Whenever you go to a restaurant and you do not know about the cuisine, read about it.
Ask. Whenever I don't know something, I'll Google it, or now I use ChatGPT, or I have a friend, anything Japanese, I call him, his name is Sultan. I ask. I don't pretend to know. And everybody learns There's always the first time you learn about something. Nobody is born knowing all of this.
Definitely.
Hani, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bedouin Foodie and myself are going to meet you in another episode of amazing food unscripted stories of amazing things, discussions, learnings in English, and we're loving it. In our next episodes, surprise, surprise, it's going to be unscripted all the way, so we don't know. See you next week.